I'm Rick Moore, and this is Connections, a podcast connecting you with news, newsmakers, sports, and entertainment voices all over the North Shore, brought to you by Moynihan Lumber of Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, and by the Institution for Savings, based in Newburyport, with branches throughout the region. All right, I'm very happy now to be joined by Dave Radigan, educator, professional comedian, and all-around good guy. Dave, welcome back to MSO.
Hey, thanks for having me.
It has been a while, and I know that Bill and you have been chatting, and so much has gone on since I almost spilled my coffee here. So much has gone on since I've got to be careful around this electronics. Since March, obviously, but Dave, you have been involved for so long in so many places here with your comedy. But more impressively to me, it's the fact that you do it for good. You do it to try to help people and to raise money all over the place. So what's the latest status? Where are things standing right now with respect to because everything has to be done, I'm guessing, virtually. You can't have a lot of people together.
Right, right. You can't. We did our first virtual show for Cape Ann NAMI, or the first one I've been on and the first one my company's done. We did one for Cape Ann NAMI, and it actually went pretty well. Our National Alliance for Mental Health, I think, is the or of mental health, whatever. National Alliance Mental Health, Cape Ann, and we did that a couple weeks ago, and it was actually a lot of fun. And there were definitely drawbacks to that medium, and but there's also a plus that we can go out, we can actually have some fun on Zoom. I've done, I have a library presentation that I did, I used to do it live, and I do it libraries, I do it at businesses, I do it for Councils on Aging, it's laughter in your life. It's basically, it starts with stand up, and then it gets a little bit into the benefits of laughter, and then we wind up doing jokes and improv and sketches and stuff like that, and the people who are involved come out, and we tried to do that online. It's actually working pretty well online, mostly for libraries, which are, like everybody, trying to maintain a connection with the community at a time when the community can no longer go to the library. And I know they've been limited. You know, you have to, in Beverly, you have to make an appointment. You can request a book and then come to the front, and they have you pick it up, and it's all very, very safe. As safe as they can make it. So a lot of libraries are trying to do the same or more programming. And it actually, that's been kind of fun, but it's a challenge, you know, figuring out how to use the technology that we can use to achieve the things we can no longer achieve in person.
There's so many layers here, Dave. You know, you refer to mental health, and comedy and so on, raising money for that. I remember when I was teaching when I was leading a course on de-stressing, we had some videos by Loretta LaRoche, and her approach was, laughter certainly is for good health, and you do that. But one of the things, and you know, she did it by video in our classroom, but even in the classroom, we're in there and we're reacting together, laughing at stuff and talking about stuff, and you don't have that when you're performing now, right? I mean, you're putting it out there.
Well, it depends on, and this is one of the things we've had to figure out. Like one of the things that I do that typically with a library presentation, they want you to mute and listen, and because what'll happen is somebody's running the vacuum, somebody you know comes into the room and starts talking, a dog starts barking, any of those things can happen, and and we're all the same volume. It's not like you're in a comedy club and you've got the microphone and you've got the speakers and you've got more volume. But for comedy, it's like we accept those obstacles because we want to hear people laugh. Because what's even worse as a comedian is if people are muted and you're doing your material, you're trying to make them laugh and you're not hearing anything. And it's awful.
Yeah,
it's like doing your stuff in the forest. There's nobody there to hear. And so you don't know, you don't have that feedback, that there's little exchange of energy. And I think the same is true, I've talked to people who were preachers, and they said the same is true. Actors, the same is true. I watched a one-woman show that was done out of Mansfield at the MMAS Theater, and it was really good. But you can just see watching it, it's like, oh, she would have gotten a big laugh there.
Yeah.
She would have gotten, this would have been dramatic. She would have gotten an applause break. And as a performer, you expect those things. I really admire actors and comedians who can do that. You know, just provide all the energy for the performance and carry on. Where if they were live, they would hear and they would feel a different reaction. I had a friend once who did a one man show at Salem State, and it was just we had three people in the audience, and I was one of them. And I remember thinking, his concentration was fantastic because the performance was great. And it must just be so hard to do that in an empty room for that long. And like I said, I thought it was great to see, but I felt a little bit badly for him that he didn't get a larger crowd, because he would have, you know, I know the feeling I get.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure that an actor feels the same thing. So, but that's the life. That's the life. And we are doing a few live shows, but even, you know, I'm looking to do New Year's Eve, and I'm talking to somebody about doing three shows in a 180-seat theater, and we can only put 24 people in besides the comedian on stage.
Mm.
And that's very, very different. Bob Marley's agent, I don't know if you know Bob Marley, but he's a great comedian. He was doing the Manchester Palace Theater in Manchester. And I don't know what he wound up doing, but I know at the time I talked to his manager, he was saying that he thought Bob was going to do 12 shows to accommodate all of the people who had already purchased tickets.
Mm.
And they would split it into 12 shows over the weekend. And it had been like a two-night run. And they were going to just six comedy shows in a day is more than anybody does. But Bob has got a tremendous work ethic. And it's funny, I don't know what he wound up doing. I think he wound up doing six shows. But even then, he was coming from Maine, so... The other consideration is once he got to Manchester, New Hampshire to do the set, would he have to stay for 14 days?
Yeah. Oh, there's so much to consider. I haven't watched, I tried to get tickets to, Shaolin Lou a couple of times for a concert. And of course, both times, one was in the spring. Same thing was rescheduled for the fall. They were both canceled. Now, one has been rescheduled again for next May, but there's a lot of stuff virtual. I haven't seen any performances online, whether it's pay-per-view or not. Have you seen any, Dave? Have you watched them? And what's your reaction? How's that work compared to, you know, say being there?
I've watched two comedy shows. I've been a part of a third comedy show, and I've watched the one-woman show,
mm-hmm.
Becoming Dr. Ruth. And the one woman show, as I said, it was great, but you miss that audience, that live feel of like when they would give her an applause break, when they would laugh, when they would, you know, you say a funny line and isn't broken up with laughter. And, it's just different when you're there and you feel that everybody else laughs at the same time. And the comedy has been, it's been a mix. I think our show went really well. I don't want to tell you the other shows because I'm about to be critical, but I could tell, and one show I could tell that the best comedian in the show was totally thrown off
right.
by the energy vacuum that he was in. And, one of the things that I teach communication at UMass Lowell and at Northern Essex Community College, and with virtual, where we're all talking by Zoom, the toughest thing is to get people to look at the camera. And it's tough for me too, because when you look at the little camera on the video screen, on the virtual screen, you're not looking at the screen. So you're usually, if you and I are face to face, I'm looking in your eyes, you're looking in my eyes, and of course we're mooning, but actually we wouldn't be mooning, but anyway, but you know, we'd be looking at each other,
right,
and it would be very natural. And if we're on a virtual, on a Zoom call, if I'm looking in your eyes, quote unquote, looking directly at you, it means that I'm actually looking at the camera,
right,
above your picture,
right,
and I'm not looking at your picture, I'm not looking at your face. So it's very counterintuitive, and I think a lot of comedians, and students, and teachers, are still getting used to that. And then there's the thing of, like, I had a friend, and I heard about this, but a friend of mine, and he was doing a Zoom thing, and he was killing. Everybody was laughing, but one guy didn't like him. And one guy in the middle of his set turns to his wife, I assume, and says, "I don't think he's funny." And it came out just as loud
yeah,
as anything that was said.
Oh no.
And my friend said afterwards, he's like, I can't even make fun of the guy because I don't know where he is.
And, right. Oh my goodness.
Yeah. And you know, so it's a mixed bag. I think we're all learning, but I think we're all learning at the same time that a lot of us are, you know, getting a little bit zoomed out. You know, they've done family things and,
yeah,
things with you know, people and their girlfriends and people who are separated by physical distance and obviously work and school and all that, and that's been difficult, that's been tricky, and I've done some live shows, and during the summer the live shows were really fun, and they were a different type of an energy exchange, and it wasn't like seeing a great comedy in a theater or at a club, but it was still fun to be out, and everybody was happy to, you know, have the chance to be out.
Yeah.
But now I'm, you know, the weather's changed, and you know, I do an open mic in Salisbury. In fact, let me plug my toy drive for this, because
absolutely.
We do a show, a workshop, and it's new comedians and it's some veteran comedians and a real mix. And one thing we're getting is some comedians, you know, we're indoors, they don't want to come in, they don't want to risk it. So we're getting comedians basically from all over, like from a wider range of comedians, because there are so few shows with people at it. We are getting huge crowds where, you know, where people are, when we had outdoor shows, we had pretty good crowds, but when we moved indoors, I think some people are still reluctant to go to indoor spaces, and you know, we're doing all kinds of things. We're wiping down the mics in between comedians, and we're putting on little individual microphone covers. We're using two mics, one for the host who's up there all the time, and one that gets wiped down in between the comedians with an antiseptic wipe. Anyway, so we're doing that every Tuesday, but we had to change it because of the curfew.
Mm-hmm.
We're now on at 7 o'clock, where we were on before at 8 o'clock. So it's just a very, very different kind of an environment, even there. But it's fun to be out. You know, everybody who comes out says it's fun to be out, and like I said, we're getting comedians from far and wide.
Where is this, Dave? Where is this?
Oh, Salisbury. The Winner's Circle in Salisbury.
Winner's Circle.
Free,
okay,
show every Tuesday at 7 o'clock, and we're also doing the toy drive, which we do every year. We do it every year at Christmas time. This year's charity. This year we're actually combining our efforts, or we're just joining in to the Runners Club,
mm-hmm,
at the Winner's Circle, which is doing their own toy drive, and the recipients are the Merrimack, Massachusetts Holiday Helpers. And so anybody who'd like to drop off a toy, new unwrapped toy, is welcome to do that if they come by the Salisbury to the Winner's Circle anytime. It's right on 110, close to the highway,
okay,
211 Elm Street. And if you want to come down and watch some comedy from 7 o'clock to about 8:30, 9 o'clock.
Excellent.
Come on down.
All right, I'll be sure to link to that. But you know, as we're doing this, Dave, I'm thinking that you know, so much has changed in such a short amount of time. It's going to take some time to digest this. But I'm thinking on the other end, as the vaccine becomes available and we get closer and closer to getting back to a more normal thing, some of this stuff is going to be useful. You're going to find some new ways to, dare I use the word, communicate by the experiences that you've had.
Yeah. Oh, I think so. And it's going to be interesting to see what happens. And you know, we'll take the classroom for one. The nice thing for me is that instead of getting up at 5:30 for my 8 o'clock class, because I have to drive to Lowell, it now I can get up at 6:30 for my 8 o'clock class. And, you know, just zoom in and do it that way. And I think that's going to be, it's going to be an interesting thing to see how many teachers who now have learned online and virtual class techniques are going to want to go back to a face-to-face teaching. I think most of us will, because I think it's, but I think we'll adopt elements of it. I think we'll adopt elements of it. And I think a lot of people get better at teaching online. I think one thing a lot of students and teachers have both found is how difficult it is to learn online. A lot of students at this time of year have gotten a little untethered, and they just, I don't know if they lose interest or if they just drift away, but, unless you're a really motivated, disciplined student, it's a real solid likelihood that you're going to have to fight that impulse to stop tuning in, to stop doing the tasks that we tell you to do, to stop doing this. And from a teaching standpoint, you're realizing how much you have to, you know, how many different types of tasks you've got to give students. But then, of course, the students look at the tasks and they think, well, they're just giving me busy work. Mm. It's not important, versus looking at it and saying, oh, this is to reinforce the lesson. This is to reinforce the lesson. This is to reinforce the lesson. So I think that's going big back and forth. And like I told you I think I mentioned this off air. We've got more kids are getting COVID because that age group has been, I don't know if it's because they're more social or because they're working part-time jobs and they're coming in where maybe some people would back off of a job if they had a health condition or an elderly parent that they live with. I'm not sure what the reason is, but a lot of my students, a lot of my students have COVID, and a lot of them have really bad cases. So it's, you know, I know that I've heard a lot of people going into the election, you know, it's a hoax. It's not, you know, young people don't get it. There's no threat to them. And unfortunately, that's frequently the way a pandemic goes, is it gets more and more dangerous to the healthy as it's amplified.
It's mind-boggling as an educator to see that and to talk with kids. And I had a kid a long time ago who just flatly refused to believe that we had been on the moon, because his sole resource of news and information was Fox. And I actually asked a professor, Seth Shostak, Dr. Seth Shostak, who's a senior astronomer. I said, what do I do with this kid? And he said, you got to let him go. And that was 20 years ago, which sort of was a precursor of what's gone on now. But there is good news, Dave. I actually heard a story this morning that a man I know has some friends who they're parents of a very notable attorney in Washington, D.C., and they're avid Trump supporters. And they actually had to visit their daughter, the lawyer in Washington, D.C., for a week, and she refused to have Fox on. The only thing she had on television were your basic, known news sources like NBC, ABC, CNN, and those things. And this person who was telling me the story said, after a week of being Foxless, the parents had changed their minds and were now anti-Trump supporters. So,
wow.
So I think that there are some people who would, you know, be willing to listen and to, Dave, that's the big thing. I've been reading about this, listening skills, part of communication. I'm finding that if you just listen to each other, then there's a chance to make improvements. I mean, you teach communications. Is listening a big part of what you do?
Oh, it's a huge part of it. It's a huge part of it. It's listening. It's also, in some cases, active listening. It's not jumping. I think one of the big things politically and in terms of understanding each other and maybe changing each other's minds, or at least, you know, exchanging ideas in a competent way, you know, you've got to listen and you've got to not judge. And it's hard not to judge, because, you know, I have conservative friends, and, you know, I get on social media especially, and I just, you know, you just want to have an emoji that says, I can't believe you said something so stupid. But you really don't want to jump down anyone's throat because, you know, what I find is I find that, I talk to a millennial and I know that they're thinking, geez, I wish I had an emoji. This guy is so stupid.
And, oh, God, I love it.
But I think that there was a study that was done by somebody, and it was in, I'm just trying to think of where I read it, maybe the Atlantic. But they talked about trying to change the minds of people. And when you kind of don't judge and you don't share that judgment and you try to find common ground with people and find out what's going on with them, you know, then you have a chance to understand each other and to maybe, you know, change each other's minds.
I agree. And I'm learning at this late stage of my life, I'm learning how to listen. It's more than just being quiet and nodding your head. And, I'm beginning to get the idea. And, I just think if we could have more one-on-one conversations with each other across the country, then things can get better. Dave, it's the holiday season coming up here, and I ordinarily you would be probably pretty busy lining up gigs and stuff like that, but tell me a little bit about Scamp Comedy Productions, because Bill has been, you know, doing these interviews with you. I have not. Enlighten me a little bit about Scamps, what it is, what it does, and what you guys are all about.
Well, we do shows of all kinds, comedy shows. You know, we'll do restaurant shows and bars and theaters and corporate shows, and we do a lot of fundraisers. And I know I talked with Bill about this. When COVID hit, I had a monster March and April booked with all kinds of fundraisers, and I had just done my taxes, so I remembered that I had brought in about $30-something thousand for my company, which is divided among comics and everybody else, in March and April of the previous year of 2019. And I assumed I was probably headed to about the same this year. And all of a sudden it just stopped. And the weekend that it stopped, second weekend in March, I went from five shows to one show, and it was lightly attended. And the week before, we had been packed on, you know, on a couple of different shows. And it was, you know, all of those charities. If I brought in that much money, that meant that there were charities bringing in five, six times that, as a total. And all of those charities and nonprofits, you know, some of them are like, you know, teams trying to, you know, buy jackets and stuff like that. But a lot of them are charities for people in need, scholarship funds, things like that. And they weren't getting their money. And the same is true in the fall. I remember at the time people were saying, well, all these people that won't raise money, they'll do it in the fall, but then they'll be competing with each other because they'll be competing with all the fall fundraisers for people to give. And then the fall didn't happen. So it's really hurt the fundraising business, and it's really hurt the, I know people have been very philanthropic and all of that, but I think it's really hurt the, now obviously, if you can't travel, your travel team that's going to Cooperstown is kind of a wash. You know, you couldn't raise money for a trip you couldn't take anyway, but it's really interrupted the fundraising, and a lot of comedians are staying home because there were just no shows. And when they do go out, the crowds are a lot smaller. I did a sellout up in Gunquit at Jonathan's, and there were 50 people in the audience.
Yeah.
And that was a sellout. I did a sellout in Manchester, New Hampshire, and it was 80 people. And it's just kind of a new norm. I feel badly for my friends that are work in restaurants and work in theaters because they're closed, and right now I've talked to a couple of them this week about doing something for New Year's with the smaller crowds. And it's sort of like, well, you know, we're doing these things, and a lot of what they're doing is just to kind of keep touching their people and keep their people involved with them. I know the Cabot in Beverly was planning huge things for their 100th, and now they've got a big virtual thing this Thursday. And a lot of the reason is just, you know, you've got to carry on so people still know that you're there, and you want people to have a good experience. But are they, but it's just, you know, it's the reality we're in now, and with this second or whatever you want to call it, this recent surge of cases, it really is a new reality. It's a little grim, and I'm looking forward to when it's over.
I think we all are, and I think there's going to be a lot of celebrations to make up for this in the end. I think it's sort of going to be like the Roaring Twenties all over again 100 years later. I really do.
Well, I think they'll probably be just like the Roaring Twenties, and then we'll have another surge.
No.
Surge.
No more surges.
I'm just happy, Rick, that we're going through such a smooth transition in Washington, and that things are going so well there.
Yeah, it's nice to see everybody come together so friendly, huh?
Oh, it's amazing. And I like the fact that these companies, all these drug companies, came out and they said, with their results, 95% affected, 92% affected, and they all did it right after the election. And you know, part of me thinks, well, they probably didn't want to impact the election. But I'm thinking, you know, I know what my right wing friends are going to say, mm-hmm. and I know that we can all count on January 21, 2021, where we're going to say, all right, the hoax is over. No one's
yeah.
got COVID.
Yeah, yeah.
Go back.
Yeah, except for the 260,000 who were dead. You know,
and all the healthcare workers
yep.
have been working overtime.
Yeah, they kind of gloss over that. Those who don't believe that this is really happening.
But,
are you taking notes? And because when it does open up again, David, you're going to be very, very busy. As I said, there are going to be a lot of celebrations, and you and all of your entourage, your friends, your colleagues are going to be in demand. So you're going to have some fresh new material. But I bet you got a volume on your desk right there as we speak.
I am trying to write as much as I can. But I got to tell you, we're all looking forward to a big bounce back. But let's put it this way: that's the optimistic view. Is we're going to have a huge bounce back, and people are going to be thrilled to go out. But I can tell you, I've done stuff about the, and you know, everyone's doing stuff about the pandemic now, and people are starting to laugh. But I remember when we first went out, you could do a little on the pandemic, but people weren't really laughing at the pandemic. It was too soon. Mm-hmm. And now I think we've reached the point where everybody's sick of it, and you know, and we're getting there, so we can start to laugh at it. But I can tell you, people have been early on when we were first doing shows in I guess July and August. There were it was definitely a mixed kind of response to anything COVID related.
Yeah, I can.
But luckily, there've been all kinds of other things to do. I mean, I think we're all you know, I just had a big milestone over the weekend. I finally used the last roll of toilet paper that I bought in March. And but I think all the weird stuff that's gone along with COVID, the fact, you know, the masks and the distance and the politics and all the nonsense, I think that is kind of going to be pretty funny, and I'm looking forward to the day that we'll all laugh at it, and it'll be hopefully in the rearview mirror for years to come.
Amen to that. That is David Rattigan, educator and comedian, and this is MSONewsSports.com. This has been Connections, a podcast connecting you with news, newsmakers, sports, and entertainment voices all over the North Shore. Brought to you by Moynihan Lumber of Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, by the Institution for Savings, based in Newburyport, with branches throughout the region. Connect with Connections by emailing msonewsports@gmail.com.